car bomber who struck a crowd near a major Shiite shrine. 105 people were wounded. A United Nations report says that in the first half of this year, 14,000 Iraqi civilians have been killed. In Japan, the Prime Minister says all Japanese troops have now withdrawn from Iraq. The last of the 600 non-combat troops have arrived in Kuwait for the return home. In Baghdad, the head of the Independent Electoral Commission was arrested yesterday on corruption charges. He and other election officials are accused of misusing public funds. In Washington, the House of Representatives defeated a proposed constitutional amendment that would ban gay marriage. It fell short of the two-thirds majority necessary for approval. Also on Capitol Hill, in Senate testimony, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez said that President Bush blocked an internal probe of the National Security Agency's program that monitors Americans' international calls and emails. In New Orleans, a doctor and two nurses have been charged by the state attorney general with second-degree murder in connection with the deaths of elderly patients after Hurricane Katrina. Off the North Carolina coast, the second tropical depression of the season is forming. And in Indonesia, the death toll from the tsunami has gone up to 339 people.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
In Washington, veterans whose personal information was stolen will no longer receive free credit monitoring services. A White House official says that's because the laptop computer that contained the information has been recovered and the FBI has determined that it was not accessed. The New York Times announced they will be cutting back the page size of the newspaper. They will also close a New Jersey printing plant, eliminating about 250 jobs. The moves are expected to save the company $42 million a year. Microsoft has entered a four-year partnership with Nortel Networks to gain a foothold in the business telephone market. The companies plan to develop new technology that will allow customers to use new phones to handle voice functions, instant messaging, and email. In June, wholesale prices in the U.S. went up by 0.5%. However, excluding food and energy, that amount was 0.2%, according to the Labor Department. Toyota announced a worldwide recall of more than 400,000 vehicles, including the hybrid Prius, Echo, and Yaris models. There is a concern that a faulty engine part could cause an oil leak in the engine, which could make the vehicle completely stop. A group from Oklahoma City has announced plans to buy the Seattle Supersonics and the Seattle Storm. There will be more details coming up. Light Sweet Crude is trading at $73.54 a barrel today. And looking at Wall Street at this hour, the Dow is up 51 points, the Nasdaq up 5, the S&P 500 up 2. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Bramov. It's 5 minutes past the hour.
Roll up your sleeves and put on your gloves, because the work is just beginning.
Monday warrior, me stride. Today's Tom Sawyer, me stride.
It's time to turn the conversation to taking back America. From the crusaders who have drained our treasury, created needless wars, and expect the working people to pay for their billionaires' games, it's time for the Bruce Birch Radio Program. Brought to you by the West Virginia Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They are building the American dream each and every day. You can get in on the program by dialing in to 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. And now, your host, Bruce Birch.
Hello. Now, I'm not Bruce Birch, but welcome to the Bruce Birch radio program. I'm Agnes Kincaid, and I'd like to welcome everybody here this afternoon. We're going to play an interview Bruce did a while back concerning the Hamdong case. This is Lieutenant Commander Charles D. Swift. We would like you to remember that there is recourse against our government, and this is some of what was done. Bruce will be with you soon, but he would like for you to listen to this once more. So, with no further ado, thank you.
It's time for another hour of conversation radio on the Head On Radio Network. Where the callers are the experts. You're back with the Bruce Birch radio program. With your host, Bruce.
All right, welcome back to Radio for a Free America. This is the Bruce Birch radio program, and I am Bruce Birch. Glad to be back with you here at the second hour of the radio program. We are being brought to you by the Head On Radio Network and also through the Head On Radio Network by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. Thanks, guys, for all you do. On the line with us presently, we have Lieutenant Commander Charles D. Swift. He is assigned as a defense counsel in the Office of the Chief Defense Counsel in the Department of Defense Office of Military Commissions as a defense counsel and is detailed to represent Salim Ahmed Hamdan, who is a citizen of Yemen. Lieutenant Commander Swift has testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee regarding the lawfulness of military commissions. Lieutenant Commander Swift is one of the 2005 recipients of the Medal of Liberty from the American Civil Liberties Union and selected as runner-up for Lawyer of the Year by National Law Journal and has been named as one of the 100 most influential lawyers in America for his work on Hamdan versus Rumsfeld. Lieutenant Commander Swift, welcome to the Bruce Birch radio program.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. I thought it was amazing that I was able to get a hold of you, but I'm really excited to have you on the show, mainly because of what happened yesterday. Now, just, you know, everybody in the world has heard probably what happened yesterday, but real briefly, if you could you tell us exactly what the ruling was yesterday?
Sure. The petition that we brought to the Supreme Court, Professor Katyal and myself on behalf of Mr. Hamdan, is fairly complex, but I'll break it down. The court ruled basically, in its most fundamental, that the military commissions that the President had ordered and later convened after 9/11 violated the Constitution and were illegal in their form. They also found that the crime that had been brought to the military commissions was not a war crime and therefore could not be tried, even if they changed the form of the commissions.
Wow. So that's a pretty significant ruling.
It's been hailed by already by legal scholars as probably landmark. The court takes on its probably most important role in the separation of powers during time of war, because this is where the president rises to the zenith of his powers. As commander-in-chief, those powers are the highest that the president has. And the Supreme Court has looked at those powers, starting with the Civil War, going on into World War I, World War II, and now during the Korean War, during the Vietnam War, and now in the middle of what's been deemed the War on Terror. And Hamdan v. Rumsfeld looks directly at those powers, because the president's power to convene a separate justice system has been looked at six different times now by the Supreme Court, and you know, under his commander-in-chief powers, and it's 3-3. On three times they found that he could do it, and on three times they found that he couldn't do it, today being, or yesterday being one of those times. It's particularly relevant here in what's been deemed the war on terror, because this war is different than any other war that we've ever been involved in, because there's no defined enemy, and there's no defined end. And, you know, and by that I mean when we start a war, you don't know when it's going to end, but you do know what victory will look like. And historically, you've known who you're at war with. In this particular case, we're more at war with a tactic than with any particular group or individuals, as we can already see. You know, if it started against Al-Qaeda, then the latest the way that it now shows itself is different than what we had originally started against.
Sure.
Most people don't think Osama bin Laden's really even in charge anymore, that there are these other groups, whether it's an Al-Qaeda in Iraq or new cells springing up all over the place. And so the real concern in that, not only in that it presents a problem to security, but it's very difficult to define where the president's powers begin and end. And, you know, military commissions represent really the far end of presidential power, if you want to think about it, because it's the president moving into an area that is almost only other time exclusively the area of Congress and the judiciary. The Congress writes laws, and the judiciary decides whether they've been violated or not. Here, the president said, I can write the laws, and I'll decide whether they've been violated. So, you know, this is all the power of government coming into one individual.
Yeah.
And, you know, the court pushed back yesterday and says, no, we're going to use recognized congressional statutes, and we're going to, in this particular case, hold the president to the traditional norms of military justice or civil justice. It also, on an international stage, did something very important. One of the great changes to the Geneva Conventions occurred after World War II, because one of the problems was undefined people. And
right.
What conventions would apply. And, you know, there were a lot of issues with that. So they passed what was called Common Article 3. And Common Article 3 assigned minimum treatment. It said that you would not do things like torture. You would not kill. You would not engage in humiliating or degrading treatment of the enemy. That, you know, it set a basic humanitarian threshold that you had to get over. Now, the administration took the position at the beginning of the Afghan War that Common Article 3 did not apply to Al-Qaeda. That was really a stunning position, because we had never taken that position before. During Vietnam, we accorded those protections to the Viet Cong, for instance, who didn't do all of the same things. They didn't wear uniforms. They blended in the civilian population, et cetera. But we committed ourselves to humane treatment. And so we've never said before that we weren't going to follow the Geneva Convention and that we could move outside of it. So the court, you know, one of the really important things that the court said was, no, Common Article 3 does apply. We interpret treaties, and it's our job, because treaties are the law of the land of the United States, to make the ultimate determination of these treaties, not the President of the United States. Again, because if the President has the power to both interpret a treaty, you know, sign the treaty, enforce the treaty, and then interpret what the treaty means whatever the president says. And that really makes the law in some ways meaningless. And they went on to say that Article 3 require a regular trial, and they recognize that the military trials that everyone is familiar with, the court-martial, which, you know, has been used at Abu Ghraib and may well be used at Hadith and other places, is a regular trial. And I totally agree with that. I've worked in military justice for most of my adult life. And I'm very proud of it. But the military commissions that they convened were not regular trials. They weren't representative of military justice, and that was, I think, the most important thing, that they brought us back to meeting or enforce what the rest of the world had been saying, that these need to meet the minimum humanitarian criteria. And, of course, no one had ever questioned that a U.S. trial could do that. U.S. trial system. Now, for me, one of the things when I got involved in this was that the human rights revolution of the world, we have benefit from. We led that. After World War II, we were our nation, more than any other nation, was responsible for the idea of human rights. We first really put it forward with the Declaration of Independence, and after World War II, we extended that beyond, limited classes of people. The civil rights movement begot South Africa. Our insistence on rights brought democracy to European areas. It won the Cold War, and this seemed like a huge step backwards. And, as I said on the step, what the court really did was say that fear was not going to define our values. And to me, that was a huge step in winning the war on terror.
Lieutenant Commander Swift, one of the questions that I would have for you about this is, thank you. First of all, let me just say that you're, thank you for all the work that you've done in this case. I mean, you really sort of have presented or defended the Republic, if you would like to term it that way. So thank you for doing that. But I'd also like to ask you about.
But I appreciate it.
Okay. Well, I'd also want to ask you a little bit about what those courts that were set up, what they were like. I mean, I read a little bit about it, but not a tremendous amount. What was the atmosphere, and was it fair? Was it in any way just at all?
Well, they were fundamentally flawed for all the well intentions that went into them. There were some fundamental flaws. That was probably best epitomized when they were in a news conference early on, when the then chief prosecutor, Colonel Fred Bork, said to the media, these trials will be fair because of the men and women involved in them. And it struck me at that moment that we were in real trouble, not because people wouldn't want to be fair, but because our founding fathers had recognized that the key was that we were a government of laws, not of men.
Right.
No matter how well-intentioned you were, the key to protecting the rights of individuals is the law, not the discretion of men. Really, that is what our trial system is. It's the imposition of the law. We use men and women to do it. But there are basic foundations on which they do it. And that was perhaps the most frustrating part as a military attorney, as an attorney working in them, and understanding how they wouldn't stand the test of time. What you had was the rules were constantly shifting. You had no way, and in fact, they had been so, in trying to rush and coddle together something, create some brand new system of justice, the rules were horribly incomplete. Now, if you trash 200 years of both military and civil justice and everything we've done and feel that a few people in a room can come up with the rules, I think you have another thing coming. It's incredibly disrespectful to all the work that went before. So you found yourself in a position where you either did not know the rules or the rules were not fixed at all. And throughout the process, the rules changed. The next incredibly frustrating part was that while it was an adversary system, the essential guarantees and the beauty of the adversary system in finding the truth was totally taken away. That these trials were given a dual purpose, but one purpose sat at the absolute zenith of it. It wasn't to protect the rights of the individual and only convict those who were guilty. The actual purpose was to protect national security. Now, I'm all for protecting national security, but what came is any time you said, well, this is national security, that an excuse, could be used to kick the accused out of the courtroom at any time, not let the defense see evidence, not let the defense discover evidence, to put in a statement that was unsigned. You know, well, how do I know this was actually taken? Well, that's national security. In other words, the trial was coming down to, we're from the government, you have to trust us.
Oh, my God.
Trials are not about trust us. To be about justice, they have to be a challenge of that trust and earn it. This one was, well, you just need to trust us, we have the evidence. And, you know, they would not go that far to say, but then the evidence they had, well, I don't have to put that on. You know, well, who was the translator? I'll call the FBI agent. Well, did the FBI agent speak Arabic? No. Well, can we call the translator? No. How do we know the translator even spoke Arabic? Because some of the translators working in the commission couldn't do it. They would hack at these people and they were unable to do the job. So how do we know the qualifications? Well, trust us, they will qualify.
Oh, my goodness. So,
found ourselves in was a system where, and what probably bothered me the most, was we would stand in there and say, these people, you know, they're presumed to be innocent. Okay? So they're presumed not to be a terrorist, right? Presumed not to be a terrorist, so we get all the rights of a regular individual. No, they're terrorists. They don't get any rights. Well, what happened to them being presumed not to be? Well, they're presumed not to be, and we'll have a trial and prove they are. Well, then I want my right. No. So it was, you know, I saw a cartoon very early on that basically summed it up. And asking government official, he says, terrorists should be tried by military commission. Well, how do you know they're terrorists until they have a trial? Why else would they be at a military commission? Isn't that circular logic? Now you're getting to methods. And, you know, the justice system that we as Americans value had been fundamentally flawed. And the problem to me, you know, the United States can never be expected to be liked by everyone in the world. That would be an unrealistic goal. People are always going to dislike you. Some will like you, some won't. What my father told me was that I shouldn't try and be liked, I should try and be respected. And that one of the things to be respected was to be fair. People wouldn't matter so much if I was tough, or whether I was gregarious, or whatever I was. People will respect that. And I think the same is true for nations. And we're not going to be liked by everybody, but, you know, if we're fair, then we'll be respected. And our justice system is one of those things because it is considered, by and large, to be fair. No one's saying it's perfect, but it's much, you know, it is considered to be fair to the best that any justice system can be. And, you know, because that's such a strength for us in our respect, to give it up, to hold a system that is not perceived as fair, is an incredible loss in the war on terror. Because this is ultimately a battle, much like the Cold War, for hearts and minds. And we, you know, at the beginning of the Cold War, look back at the history, you know, a lot of fear governed it, and we reacted in some ways that probably weren't keeping with our values. The longer we stayed in it, the more we got true to our values. And our values won, because ultimately the other side couldn't recruit anybody. They didn't want to play anymore. And that's how we'll win this time. We'll win because they can't recruit anybody, because when our values are held up to some organization like Al-Qaeda's values, it's not even close. And, you know, that's what we want, you know, is by staying true to our values that we'll win this. And I'm confident, actually, we can't lose it as long as we stay true to our values.
So how Lieutenant Commander Swift, how does this process go forward at this point?
Well, you know, the president has said before that he, you know, was waiting for the Supreme Court to give him direction. Well, I think, you know, no matter where you come down on this, you have to say that the Supreme Court has given him direction. They certainly have given him direction on it, on how to proceed for trials for Guantanamo Bay. And the president's also indicated that he wants to have trials and that we need to move forward. And so, you know, I'm there. The Supreme Court's given him direction. If we want to charge a crime like conspiracy, which is one of the crimes, and that's a U.S. crime. It's not an international crime. It's ours, but it certainly we have the right to punish in our courts those who would conspire to do us harm. And our federal courts are opening, functioning, and in fact, they've already tried upwards of 100 people, and the system seems to be working pretty well. People have been convicted. Some people have been acquitted, which is a sign of a healthy system. And, you know, it's working fine. And if they want to bring conspiracy charges to those courts, I'm sure they'll hear it tomorrow. And one is somewhat, you know, on Padilla. You know, we can't try him in a federal court. We can't do these things. We compromise national security. And all of a sudden, we can. Now, that may be because, you know, time's passed and the evidence isn't nearly as sensitive as it once was. But that was same things would be true for Guantanamo Bay. Any concern you had at the beginning, time's passed. Now, to hold that some of this information is still essential 5 years later is just not really realistic. And it, I think that the federal court should be the courts of choice. Now, the other choice is using the military justice system. And the court was quite clear. For war crimes, battlefield crimes, Afghanistan is a battlefield, and one's a battlefield. For those crimes that are battle-recognized, like, you know, attacking medical personnel, destroying churches, attacking news media, those types of crimes, that they can and should be, they should be tried in military court. And the military should also police the battlefield. And that, well, that's different than charging conspiracy trials, which are domestic crimes, but that both are available, and we would use the regular procedures of our courts to try these people. We're going to hold them responsible for our laws, then we will use, then we'll remain true to our laws at the same time.
We are talking presently with Lieutenant Commander Charles Swift, who is please correct me if I'm wrong, you are the second chair in this, in the defense of Hamdan, correct?
Well, in the federal court, yes. In the military court, I'm the lead attorney.
Okay, in the military court,
you know,
okay.
Professor Katyal and I kind of split it up. And principally, I handle the military issues, he handles the constitutional and civil issues.
Okay. And you guys have done a fantastic job. You know, I wanted to ask you about there's a law that was enacted last year that basically is called the Detainees Treatment Act of 2005.
Detainees Treatment Act of 2005.
This apparently denied detainees the right to avail themselves of any federal court. So does the Supreme Court decision then overturn this as well?
Well, it certainly did as far as Hamdan went. Found that because Hamdan's suit had been brought beforehand, that they had not been stripped of jurisdiction. The court interpreted the statute as not stripping them of jurisdiction. It was, you know, the first version of it in the Senate explicitly did so. The second version was a little, was not clear, really. It was hastily written legislation, and it had, you know, structurally, it was difficult to interpret. But the court ultimately came to the conclusion that it had not stripped them of jurisdiction, and that stripping habeas jurisdiction had to be very clear. The court, you know, five justices were absolutely clear on that. That was the reason, the principal reason for Justice Scalia's dissent. He disagreed with that and said that, no, that it should have stripped, and they should have heard this later. But notwithstanding that, the five members of it found... commentators think that it probably means, and certainly Justice Scalia did. Justice Scalia was worried that because of the court's decision, that all of the detaining cases that have been filed habeas regarding, for instance, how detainees that were being held not even for, without a trial and weren't going to be charged, would be, that those lawsuits were still alive. And, he certainly felt, Justice Scalia certainly felt they were by virtue of the court's decision yesterday. That'll be for the D.C. Court of Appeals to decide. It's really not part of, the case that we were involved in directly on the legality of the types of trial.
Apparently, also, currently in the Senate, there are some senators who are working on a way to try to make a legal, I guess, another sort of set of military tribunals that would be legal. Do you have any knowledge of this at all?
Oh, sure. Yes. Obviously, there, again, I testified, as indicated earlier, about the last set of hearings that were held by Senator Spector. I was invited to testify by his office at it. And they are, again, indicating they're going to have hearings and revisit this issue after the Supreme Court has legislated. Yeah, I hope that we're very, very cautious. I have to say I've got Mr. Homsen's interest here, but I'd also say that we should be very, very cautious. And this may be a good way to think about it. All of this is not unprecedented. It's all happened before. In particular, what I'm going to draw us back is to the days after the Civil War.
Okay.
That's probably when military commissions were used the most.
Mm-hmm.
And military commissions under that case were used, after the Civil War, over presidential objection. And at the time, this was the principal reason that they tried to, Johnson was brought up on impeachment articles, was that the North desired to punish the South. And, they began Reconstruction. Now, there were a lot of good things in Reconstruction. We needed to get over slavery. And commissions were deemed as necessary to get rid of a terrorist element. The particular problem was a group called the Knights of the White Magnolia. And I'm not sure if your listeners are probably familiar with what that group eventually became, the KKK. I think all of us can agree that the KKK was not a good thing, that they were also a terrorist organization. The
sure.
problem with the military commissions that were used there was that they were not perceived as the South as bringing justice. And they were perceived by the people who were living in the South as part of the punishment against them. And ultimately, it made the KKK, instead of stamping it out, it made them more popular. And their methodology got even more violent. And, they grew and were able to bring in members. So instead of curing the problem that was sought out to be done, the idea that we would just go to an extremely harsh form of military law, that the situation required it, that we were going to strip the defendants of all their rights, and we were going to, by gosh, put down this terrible terrorist organization, which it was, ended up backfiring. Reconstruction ended, and instead of having the South reconciliated with the North, you had terrible racial problems. You had a South and North that were terribly divided. And, it would take 100 years to get over it, and the country still bears scars of all of this. So the question is, do we want to make the mistakes again? Now, we have to understand that al-Qaeda represents something like 0.01% of the Islamic world. And the rest of the 99.99% is up for grabs. But if it's perceived that the Islamic world is being treated unequally by the United States, we're not going to be the ones who win their hearts and minds. So we need to think hard about what history teaches us before we go in and start messing with the rules, especially when we've got two systems of justice, both of which work incredibly well, have the benefit of saying, well, this is how we're punishing our people, so, subjecting you to it is not victor's justice. then we have a much greater chance of having our actions match our words. And that's how we're going to win people over, as I said. So I really hope I'm given, you know, I'm certainly going to try and get my input into this, but I really hope that we think very carefully about whether we want to scrap a system of military justice that has worked well, is conceived as fair, and start yet again instead of going back. Because, you know, if they decided to do a court-martial or federal civil trials, we could start tomorrow. We don't have to rewrite all of this. We can start tomorrow. Both are...
Sure.
And, you know, and I personally believe that it is high time we started. I feel tremendously for the victims of 9/11, their families. I believe they deserve justice. And that's justice that's regular, normal, and they can see. And, you know, it's not revenge, it's justice. And that's what their families deserve.
You're absolutely right. I just, you know, I also, the other thing about this, too, that I wanted to ask you about is, what does this, I mean, you know, as far as the future of military detentions, is this a, does this ruling affect any of the detentions that have happened down there, or any, is this going to release anyone, or?
No, it doesn't release anyone, and I think that's important. What it does, you know, the president has indicated that he's committed to moving Guantanamo forward, and, you know, that's important. What it does is show the way to move forward, the way to move forward to fair trials. And it also, if it has an implication, that implication is in Common Article 3, that there will be no cruel and inhuman and degrading treatment of individuals who are in detention. And, you know, I think that's extraordinarily important, too. As a military officer, I can tell you that, hey, 99.9% of military members are honorable. They do the right thing every day. Unfortunately, things like Abu Ghraib happen. And, you know, we move swiftly, we punish people for that, and that's important. But when we say that we're not committed to ensuring that nothing inhumane or degrading happens to these individuals, then, you know, we put a specter out there in the world that Abu Ghraib is the norm, not the exception. And I think that part of it, that Common Article 3 applies to this, and that treatment cannot be inhumane or degrading, or, you know, is essential to, again, having us win the battle of hearts and minds, and to really reflect what our values are.
Sure.
You know,
absolutely.
That way is not American. It's, you know, it's not how we function, and when it happens, we should stamp it out, and we should proudly declare that that's who we are. And we're not going to do these things, and when they're done, they're illegal, and they're wrong. We can't be perfect, but we can, you know, again, recommit ourselves to the law and that no one's above it.
Lieutenant Commander Swift, thank you so much for joining me today on the radio program, and I certainly hope that as things develop in this case later down the road that we can get you back on the air and we can have another conversation about it.
No problem. Have a great day. Bye now.
Okay. You too. And that was Lieutenant Commander Charles Swift, who is the lead military counsel for Amzi Hamdan, whose case went through the Supreme Court and was ruled on yesterday that, you know, these military tribunals are basically not acceptable under the eyes of the Geneva Conventions and the U.S. law. You listen to Bruce Burt's radio program right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Planet Check. Planet Check.
Michael Franti from Spearhead talks about the new benefit CD for the nonprofit environmental law firm, Earth Justice.
I'm always involved in Earth Justice as an idea, no matter where I go.
Franti, along with artists Nora Jones, Los Lobos, Willie Nelson, and Bonnie Raitt, donated their music in support of life's absolute necessities, clean air and water.
Music today is not speaking to really what's happening on the streets. It's really important that artists come together, work on projects together, and put out unified voices about what's happening today in our planet.
In the United States alone, more than 70,000 people die per year from air pollution.
Keep on talking now. Yes, I will. Keep on singing by.
Music makes a difference. Give it a spin at wherewelive.org. That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at cliffbar.com.
There's a place where a total stranger will give their blood to save your life. There's a place where someone you never knew will save your child from drowning. A place where people will give you food and shelter after a flood. There's a place where, when you need it most, someone will reach out their hand, put it across your shoulder and say, "Everything's going to be okay." That place is called America, where we look out for each other. And it's up to us to keep it that way. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org today.
You're back on the Bruce Birch radio program, Radio for a Freer America. And, you know, that we just listened to the Hamdan interview today. And, I really, part of the reason why you heard that today is because I had I was running late getting to the studio. So, and the reason why I was running late getting to the studio was because of the ineptness of the Department of Veteran Affairs. I'll call it like I see it. Ineptness. Complete and utter ineptness. I'm talking about ineptness on a scale larger than God could create. Oh, my gosh. Anyway, you know, the Hamdan ruling is all of the effects of that are getting shaken out now. And I don't know if you have been, if any of you have had a chance to take a look at or listen to any of the hearings that have happened on Capitol Hill as a result. But Charles Swift, who is the lieutenant commander that we just heard on that interview, has been one of the people who has testified frequently there on Capitol Hill, and he was actually there the other day, and he was asked a direct question by, I believe it was Senator Jeff Beauregard Sessions from Alabama, about military detentions and the courts that they had set up. And it was really interesting to hear Swift basically go directly against a lot of the older, more seasoned attorneys that were sitting at the table. Because one of the things that he was saying, or one of the arguments has been, that the military tribunals that have been set up do not, the Bush administration's one of their biggest defenses has been that, the possibility exists of leaking classified data. And Lieutenant Commander Swift said, wait a minute. Now, we've done these military tribunals, these commissions, for 200 years. Probably longer than that, 200 years at least. And as a result, through these courts, Marshall, that have been created by the military and these military tribunals, there has been no leaked data, and that there are provisions in place to hear sensitive materials as a part of the discovery process in these trials. And essentially, the argument that the Bush administration has put forth that we can't have these kinds of courts because if we a regular kind of court, because if we do, this information will leak out, is basically that's basically hogwash, according to Lieutenant Commander Swift. Now, the interesting thing about it is that this is all getting shaken out right now, and time will tell how it all turns out. But the bottom line here is that the most important aspect of this is that the Supreme Court actually did something worthwhile and said, wait a minute, you don't have limitless power as a president. You do not have the capability to just create any kind of kangaroo court you wish to make it look like you're fulfilling the spirit or the letter of the law. And indeed, we do not want you just to fulfill the letter of the law. We want you to fulfill the spirit of the law. And shortly thereafter, the Bush administration, about 2 weeks afterwards, the Bush administration came out and said that they will figure out a way to put the Geneva Conventions in place in Guantanamo Bay, specifically. I didn't name it anywhere else. And the interesting thing, though, is that, Lieutenant Colonel Hamdan even mentioned it in this interview. If it wasn't in this interview, it was in something else. Actually, I think I saw him say this on C-SPAN. And, at the hearings, I believe this is where I heard him say this. He said, that it's not fair that the government, that Hamdan himself, for instance, when Swift would meet with his client, have a conversation with him about his legal defense, Hamdan would take notes and take the notes back to his cell where, he could study what was going on in the courts and all that kind of thing. Well, immediately related to strategy in his court case, et cetera, immediately the guards would come in and confiscate his notes. So the government was tipped to their entire strategy the entire time because nothing was considered to be private. Now, yes, he's in a detention cell. And yes, perhaps those notes shouldn't be taken back with him. But the bottom line is that the man did not doesn't speak English, and apparently they're having translation issues also, and that was related to that too. But point being is that there was no even resemblance of a fair justice system with regard to the military tribunals at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. And the justices, the nine justices of the Supreme Court, of course, I think it was a 5-4 ruling or 4-1, one of them sat out. Maybe it was 5-3, something like that. Yeah, it was 5-3. And I believe it was John Roberts that sat out of that ruling because he heard the case at the First District Court in D.C. Anyway. So I wanted you to hear that again. It's kind of important. We need to keep our eye on the ball and understand that, the Bush administration is going to continue to try to push the envelope when it where it boils down to executive authority, the unitary executive. That's what they're looking at. That's what this is all about. That's what this case was all about. This case was not all about whether or not to, you know, some sort of sham justice. What this was about was a test for the Bush administration to see how far its authority went and how far it could usurp the power of the presidency or the power, you know, in enacting these kinds of military tribunals. And as a result, you know, the Supreme Court basically now see that the shorter term ramifications is this relates really mainly only to Hamdan. However, every other defendant at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, could also sue to change, you know, the court. And instead of that, the president instructed the Congress. I love that he instructed the Congress, another equal form of an equal branch of government that he gets to instruct. Yeah. Well, that doesn't quite work, does it? He instructed the Congress to come up with a law that he could sign and to, you know, to change this. And so right now they're having the hearings related to this. Now, that's the shorter-term ramification. The longer-term ramification is that, you know, the Supreme Court has pretty much said, you know, we don't think that you do have this kind of power to do this. That they're, in fact, we don't think that, you know, that the president can make up the laws as he goes along. Well, that's all well and good, except for there's no other cases that I'm aware of that are being challenged regarding some of the illegal detention, some of the rendering, the rendition, I should say, that has been happening. Government sanctioned kidnapping, essentially. Now, had a conversation earlier today with some veterans. And their feeling was that, or at least a couple of them anyway, were that, you know, we don't play nice. We shouldn't play nice when it comes down to interrogations. That you don't get any information by being sensitive. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know where I fall down on that subject. I will say that in this kind of regard, if, you know, it's obvious that torture doesn't work. It's obvious that if you torture a prisoner, if you torture someone, you know, the chances are that they're going to tell you what they think you want to hear. You know, if you attach electrodes to someone and make them stand in a bucket of water and hit them with electricity, by the time you're done, they're going to be willing to tell you whatever it is that, you know, that they think you may want to know, whether they know it or not. Just to be relieved of the pain. It's called negative reinforcement. Now, you know, basic psychology classes, you know, in college you learn that. One of the things that they say is that, you know, the subject will act to remove the pain. And therefore, it's not a lasting change. It's not something where someone is all of a sudden going to be honest. It's a change of, I want the pain removed, therefore I will tell you anything you want to hear. The waterboarding, the electrodes, the dogs, the hoods, you know, all of that stuff. And then what happens is, you know, we have two different costs here. We have the people who are being tortured. And then we have the soldiers that are actually performing the torture, and there's a double cost there, because the first cost, obviously, in the moment, is on the person being tortured. The second cost is on the torturer. And unless that person is absolutely bereft of any kind of conscience, and they're sociopathic, in other words, they like to torture people or things. They like to, you know, I can read you the whole laundry list of what qualifies a person to be sociopathic, but essentially, being sociopathic means that, you know, you do evil things and you don't think, you know, you don't even bat your eyes. It's just, you're cool with it. I mean, you can do whatever and not have any sort of reaction of guilt about it. But you know what? The sociopaths in the population are but a minuscule part of the population when compared to how many people actually commit wrongs. and end up breaking the law or committing violence or Harry Carey upon someone, especially in this kind of situation, we have soldiers that have been ordered to do certain things. And guess what? Those people are going to be paying a price for the rest of their lives. They really are. And I hate to say that, but, you know, what they've done, you know, is something that's going to, they're going to be haunting their dreams. And you know how I know? Because I work with a lot of veterans. I'm not going to say exactly where or how, because that's not relevant to the discussion. But what is relevant to discussion, to this discussion, is that, you know, through the process of us torturing and using interrogation methods that are not approved by the Geneva Conventions and are not listed in any acceptable means of interrogation around the world, using methods that we know are abusive, that we know are torturous, we are telling these soldiers and these officers that it's okay to do this. But you know what? Their conscience will tell them eventually that it's not. And what will happen with these folks is they will wake up haunting, you know, with hauntings in their dreams. And you know, I have more than a few veterans that listen to this radio program, and I know that. And I know that there are more than a few veterans out there who have done things in their past and through their service that has rendered them, you know, or I wouldn't say helpless or hopeless, but it's rendered them in, you know, in situations where, you know, they experience a lot of pain and a lot of haunting and a lot of sadness for some of the things that they've done or for some of the things that have been perpetrated upon them. And, you know, what do we have to back that up? What do we have to back that up? Well, we have a system called the Department of Veteran Affairs. And the Department of Veteran Affairs steps in to help these veterans and to work with them through their issues and to help them deal with their combat experiences in a clinical atmosphere so that they can return to normal, productive lives. Now, there are many people who have been diagnosed as PTSD, for instance, or as something else, or for instance, the guy who was charged with murder, who was here in North Carolina, and he was charged with the murder of those people in Iraq, and picked up, and it was stated that he had I forget what the actual diagnosis was, but you know he was mentally ill. The guy was mentally ill, and what happened? They put him out on the street. They didn't say to him, you know something, we don't think that you're suited to this job. They covered up the murders and they put him out on the street. Now something's going to have to change because you know what? We're going to have a lot of veterans returning from this conflagration in Iraq. We're going to have a lot of veterans returning from this process and unless something changes, those guys too are going to be dumped right back out on the street. I had an interview several, you know, actually the first show that I did here on the Head On Radio Network in this time slot, I had an interview with a returning veteran who said that the PTSD, there's a questionnaire. When they're brought back from Iraq, they're given a questionnaire. And they're basically told, now, if you answer yes to any of these questions, it's going to mean that you're not going to be able to see your family for 2 weeks. You're not going to be able to see your family for 2 weeks. Now, what soldier is going to want to answer yes to any questions that might help get him treatment if it's going to mean him staying away from his family? That's not person-centered therapy, folks. And you know what? Again, here we go. The military, again, doesn't know what the hell it's doing with that kind of stuff. Now, there are things that the military does very well. Bombing the crap out of places is something it does very well. Laser-guided missiles, something it does very well. Taking over countries, something it does very well. Dealing with personality disorders is not something that the military does very well, okay? And I don't think it's something that the VA does very well with either, but it's better than nothing. I know I came in late today, but we got to take our top of the hour break, listen to the news, and once we do that, we'll come back and we'll talk some more about the Department of Veteran Affairs. You listen to the Bruce Birch radio program. Here it is on Tuesday afternoon, and I'm glad to be back with you on the Head On Radio Network. If you want to get in on the show, 1-877-443-2366 is the number. I'll be right back.
This is the Quality News Network. In Lebanon, the fighting between Hezbollah guerrillas and the Israeli military is in its seventh day. Hezbollah rocket fire struck northern Israel, killing one woman. Israeli warplanes continued their offensive in Lebanon, killing at least 16 people. So far, 235 people have died in Lebanon and 13 civilians have died in Israel. The U.S. commissioned a Greek cruise ship, which is headed to the Lebanese coast, to ferry as many as 8,000 Americans stranded in Lebanon to Cyprus. Five U.S. warships are also traveling to the region to provide security. In all, so far, about 350 Americans have been evacuated. In southern Iraq today, 53 people were killed by a suicide car bomber who struck a crowd near a major Shiite shrine. 105 people were wounded. A United Nations report says that in the first half of this year, 14,000 Iraqi civilians have been killed, indicating that killings, torture, and kidnapping remain widespread. In Japan, the Prime Minister says that all Japanese troops have now withdrawn from Iraq. The last of the 600 non-combat troops have arrived in Kuwait for their return home. In Washington, China's top military commander is meeting with Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld to discuss stronger military ties. Their meeting will center around joint operations. In Washington, the House of Representatives defeated a proposed constitutional amendment that would ban gay marriage. It fell short of the two-thirds majority necessary for approval. Also on Capitol Hill, the Senate today is expected to pass a bill that would expand stem cell research. It has bipartisan support. However, President Bush has said that he would issue his first veto on this bill for moral reasons. In New Orleans, a doctor and two nurses have been charged by the state attorney general with second-degree murder in connection with the deaths of elderly patients after Hurricane Katrina. Across the United States, the heat wave that is gripping the nation from coast to coast continues. At New York's LaGuardia Airport, high demand for electricity caused equipment problems and some canceled flights. Also, power outages halted some of New York's subway trains during the rush hour commute. Off the North Carolina coast, the second tropical depression of the 2006 Atlantic hurricane season is forming. And in Indonesia, the death toll from the tsunami that hit yesterday has gone up. Rescuers now say that 339 people were killed. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Medtronic, the medical device maker, will pay $40 million as a settlement of lawsuits accusing it of paying doctors to use its products. Novartis plans to invest $600 million in the construction of a new flu vaccine manufacturing plant in North Carolina. It is expected to produce up to 50 million doses annually for the United States. The Chinese government announced that between April and June, their economy grew 11.3%. That's the fastest pace seen in more than a decade. However, some fear that an unhealthy surge of investment could hurt their country. In June, wholesale prices in the U.S. went up by 0.5%. However, excluding food and energy, that amount was 0.2%, according to the Labor Department. Toyota announced a worldwide recall of more than 400,000 vehicles, including the hybrid Prius, Echo, and Yaris models. There is concern that a faulty engine part could cause an oil leak in the engine, which could make the vehicle completely stop. And the New York Times announced they will be cutting back the page size of their newspaper and eliminating about 250 jobs at a New Jersey printing plant. The moves are expected to save $42 million a year. Light sweet crude settled at $73.54 a barrel today. And at the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 52 points, the Nasdaq was up 6 points, and the S&P 500 was up 2 points. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff. The time's now 5 minutes past the hour.
It's time for another hour of conversation radio on the Head On Radio Network. Where the callers are the experts. You're back with the Bruce Birch Radio Program. With your host, Bruce Birch.
All right, I'm glad to be back with you here on the second hour of the Bruce Birch radio program. It's about 6 minutes past the top of the hour. Wherever you are, 6 minutes past the top of the hour, wherever you are, and whatever time it might be in your world, it's 6 minutes past the hour in my world. We went over the break, and I was sort of doing a bit of a rant, if you will, on the VA and on torture and on the human cost of occupation, the human cost of creating violence and being having these kinds of actions going on. Now, what's the support structure that's in place to help deal with some of these things that have happened within the military and within the world? Well, here in the United States, that support structure is the Department of Veteran Affairs. Now, the Department of Veteran Affairs, as I heard recently, has had budget cuts. It's always fighting to keep the money coming in, always fighting to keep things going on. And what's very unfortunate about the fight to keep money coming in is that one would think that because these folks are veterans and these folks went overseas and through their actions and through their commitment to our system and style of government and our way of life, fought to in their own mind to defend the United States or for whatever reason that they're told. Now, what we're seeing in Iraq right now is that these soldiers are increasingly becoming less and less sure about why they're there. And as a result, many of them are becoming disgruntled. Many of them are feeling like that they're not, that they're not there for a decent reason. Many of them are, there have been many polls that have been done to look at this. It's not like I'm pulling this information out of my posterior region. Many of them feel like that there is no clear objective in Iraq. Even the most pro-military members of the military are feeling like have written letters and have written things home to say, if you want to support us, find out why we're here and let us know. And that's pretty bad. I mean, that's not just pretty bad. That's repugnant. That's pretty damned bad, And it's very sad. It's absolutely very sad that we end up in situations like this. Now, the reason why I'm even the big story of the day, obviously, I'm not avoiding it. But what I am saying, because the big story of the day is obviously of the week is what's happening in Israel and Palestine and Lebanon, and I'm not avoiding it, and I'm gonna tell you why I'm not really avoiding it. I'm just not gonna go there today, and the reason why I'm not gonna go there today is because that's where everybody else is today. If you want to go listen to what's going on with that, go listen to something else, because I'm not gonna go there today. What I am going to do is talk about some of the stuff that's going on as far as Iraq, as far as veterans, as far as what's happening that is not on the top of the news cycle. It's sort of like underneath the muddled voices, Lebanon, 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 Israel, 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 Lebanon, Lebanon, stuff that's going on right now. Scott Rowe was practicing with his band Corruption of Blood on July 3rd at his home in Ottumwa, Iowa. The police came and said he was violating a new city noise ordinance. So that was the end of the practice session. Rowe wasn't happy about it, so he staged a protest the next day. He planted an upside-down flag in his front yard and had a cutout of a police officer standing in front of it. The band's name was written in block letters across the flag. It didn't take long for Officer Mark Milligan and Sergeant Chris Logan of the Ottumwa Police Department to show up. A neighbor had evidently complained about the upside-down flag in the yard. The officers warned Rowe that he would be arrested if he didn't take the flag down. He refused, asserting his First Amendment rights. Whereupon he was arrested and charged with violating Iowa's flag desecration statute, Chapter 718A. All of this according to the lawsuit that Rowe has filed against Milligan and Logan in the Ottumwa Police Department. The Des Moines Register reports that Rowe faces 30 days in jail and a $500 fine. So much for free speech. So much for, for standing for something. So much for coming out and trying to say, you know what you're doing is wrong. Now, you know something? There's another person who's flying the flag upside down. And that's Terry Jones. Terry Jones lost her son, Jason, just over a year ago. He was an Army reservist in the Iraq War. On July 14, 2005, 4 months after returning home to Iowa, he hanged himself. He was 23 years old. He was 23 years old. He was a kid. He was a kid. He was just like a kid. Since then, Jones has been flying her American flag upside down, though someone came on her property once and turned it right side up, and another person stole it. She is quoted as saying, "We had a flag out the whole time Jason was in Iraq. Once he died, my boyfriend Vince turned it upside down to protest everything that's happening with our government, especially our soldiers being failed when they come home." Note that she says, especially our soldiers being failed when they come home. Jones said that her son wasn't the same when he got back from Iraq. She said he was a really upbeat, happy, funny kid. You could tell his smile was gone when he came home. We did notice right away that he'd space off when you're trying to talk to him. His thoughts were floating off somewhere else. She said she really got worried 3 days before her son died. She said, quote, "He called me at work towards the end of the day. He was at the mall. He was crying. He was really disoriented. He didn't know what was happening. He was afraid. He told me a friend of his had just died. I asked him what his name was. He said, Jeremy Ridlin, who died a year before." Jones said her son knew he needed help, but he didn't want to go to the VA. She said he'd gone there the month before after he hurt his wrist in a motorcycle fall. Quote, "When he went to the VA, they didn't have room to treat him that day." Plus, she says, he was worried about the stigma he might get if he appeared to be weak. He was still active duty, and she says he knew he would have to go back to Iraq. She says the military isn't doing enough for soldiers suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. She says they are not being taken care of. Victor Tate, a VA outreach specialist in Iowa, told the Des Moines Register, "We're out there in their faces. We're all there for them. At no time in the history of America has more attention been paid to veterans." Yeah, Victor Tate, well, you know what? It's probably not quite enough. It's probably not quite enough. Because here's one soldier, he didn't die on the battlefield, and he won't go down in that magical number that you people are saying is so low. Victor Tate, this guy died back here in America as a result, as a direct result of what happened to him in Iraq. And where was the VA when he needed the VA? If you were in his face, then you would know who he was. If you were in his face, then you would have seen that this man had a problem. If you were in his face, if you sat down and talked with him, or talked to his mother, for Christ's sake, you would have known that this guy needed help. You're listening to the Bruce Birch radio program. Today is a day that we're talking about veterans. And we're talking about some of the things that they have dealt with and some of the things that they're dealing with coming back. If you want to get in on the show, if you have a story you would like to share, if you want to talk about this, please do give me a call. 1-877-443-2366 is the number. Head On Radio Network is the network. I'll be right back.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. Okay, you've been president of the United States for 5.5 years now. You could have vetoed legislation that doled out billions of dollars in corporate welfare, but you didn't do that. You could have vetoed legislation that raised the federal deficit by hundreds of billions of dollars, but you didn't do that. And you could have vetoed legislation that gave drug companies a windfall under Medicare, but you didn't do that either. Instead, if you're George Bush, the only time you decide to reach for your veto pen is when Congress actually does something good and expands federal funding for stem cell research, which promises to cure juvenile diabetes, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and a host of other diseases. The House has already passed such a bill. The Senate's discussing it today, and 70% of the American public support it, but not the evangelical far right. And so Bush opposes it too, favoring frozen embryos that are only going to be discarded anyway over the lives of living, breathing human beings. And that's promoting a culture of life? No, that's putting ideology above life. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hi, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, forward it to phishing@irs.gov. That's phishing at irs.gov. Or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484. Thank you.
I've seen you in the markets, I've seen you in the streets, and at your political conventions. Talking of your crusade, talking of your nation, and other things too terrible to mention. And you proclaim your Christianity, you proclaim your love of God, you talk of apple pie and ma. I've just got one question, and I want an answer. Tell me, who would Jesus bomb? Jesus would bomb the Syrians, because they're not Jews.
All right, you're back on the Bruce Birch radio program, Radio for a Freer America, and, you know, radio where we try to where we try to get to the bottom of what's going on out there and bring you the real-life stuff that's happening. When I left to that break, I was reading part of a story of Jason Cooper, the son of Terry Jones, who Jason Cooper committed suicide after coming back from Iraq. And Terry Jones is his mother, and Terry is now a member of Gold Star Families for Peace. And she says she's forming a subchapter support group to help with military families who've had a suicide after their loved one returned home. She says so far we know of about 70 such tragedies. 70. 70 military guys, 70 veterans who come back and decide to take their own lives after having served. 70. 70 families that have been crushed, 70 families that have lost a loved one, man. And you know, that's 70 too many. 70 way too many. Recently, Ms. Jones wrote a letter to her son Jason, which she posted on his memorial website, and I can link that to you. She writes, "Jason, Mother's Day came and went, and it was so hard not to hear from you. You always had something that you were so proud to give me. I still have petals from the pink roses you sent while still in training, or all the drawings you loved to make. I carried your military boots in a Mother's Day march in Washington, D.C. to bring our troops home now. I realized then that I did spend time with you on Mother's Day, and even though it wasn't in a way that I would prefer, you will never be gone from me. You will always be in my mind and heart. I hope you are in a sea of flowers now, honey. No worries, no pain, just happy and enjoying the beauty of heaven. I miss you, buddy. I still wait for a phone call. I still long to hear, love you, Mama." "I am so grateful that you were my son to leave lifelong memories. Love you the mostest, Mama." In that letter, she talked about the upside-down flag. She wrote, "I must admit that I never really liked the idea of the flag hanging upside down, but it did represent a signal of distress, so I agreed to keep it that way." Her son came back from Vietnam. I'm sorry, from Iraq. Gosh, you know what? That was a Freudian slip. And decided that instead of getting the treatment that he so needed, he chose another way. On July 14th, after weeks of flashbacks and nightmares and having no medical help, Jason took off his dog tags, walked to the basement of his home, and wrapped a rope around his neck. And at 5 p.m. on July 14th, Jason stepped off the chair. When we have a support system in this country that forces military veterans to come back and to take their own lives, 70 that Ms. Terry Jones is aware of, 70. Think of how many more are thinking about it. Think about how many more are contemplating that as a solution. Think about how many more have instances of PTSD or other illnesses that have happened as a result of their military service, who are considering the final solution. And where's the VA? Let me tell you about the VA. And I'm going to give you a little bit of a firsthand experience today. I'm not going to say which hospital, and I'm not going to say any names or anything like that to implicate anyone, but I will say that this is a singular event that I've seen several times in the time that I've gone to the VA. Now, I'm not a veteran, so I'm one who helps veterans. And I could probably get in trouble for this, but I'm going to do it anyway because I believe that they deserve it. I walked through the front door with the couple of veterans that I had with me, and I went to the little table where you sign in, and the lady looked up at me, and she says, "What are you here for?" In a very sullen, insolent tone. And I said, "I've got some veterans here, you know, that are homeless veterans, and because they're homeless, they're supposed to receive a priority. They're supposed to receive prioritized, a higher priority treatment than the rest." That was a law that was signed into place, and is still enacted, is still in force. And I swear to you, because I reminded her of this, she purposefully went slower. As if to say, "I don't care about you or your laws or your homeless people. All I care about is making 8 hours. And I could do it fast or I could do it slow. Today I'm going to do it slow. What are you here for?" she says. "No, good afternoon. Can I help you?" "No, thank you for serving. How can I help you today?" "No, what's your, you know, no greeting. No, nothing to say to these guys, we care about you." You know, the VA claims it cares. You know, it has this VA cares all over the damn place. Do they really? Do they? Because if they do, the people, you know, I'm not going to say all of them, because there are a number of people who work for the VA who are fantastic, who are amazing people, and who make things happen for these veterans. But there are also, for the flip side of that, there are also people who go there who could care less about what happens to these people. And this guy, Jason, apparently ran into one of those as he went to go get his wrist treated from a motorcycle wreck. Because it gave him such a bad experience that he didn't go back and for other treatment. And what ended up happening to him? He stepped off a chair and hung himself. Now, I ask you, you know, and you know what? I don't like to rant, and I don't like to get angry, and I don't like to get upset, but you know what? The bottom line here is that these people are dying. You know, they're not getting met by a bullet in Iraq. They're doing it by their own hand here because of what's happened to them there. And there is no excuse for a society that can stand by and let this happen without stepping in to try to do something about it. And I'd like to say to Mr. Victor Tate, who said that the VA is out there in their faces, the Mr. Victor Tate, who says, at no other time in the history of the world has any society ever tried to tackle this as strongly as we're trying to tackle it. Let me just present an idea to those of you who work for the Department of Veteran Affairs, and I'm getting under your skin. Listen to me very, very carefully, because I want to put forth an idea. If you want someone to engage in treatment of any kind, you have to give them a reason to want to engage. And if you can't give them a reason to want to engage, guess what's going to happen? They're going to turn around and walk away. So if you come in through the door and the first thing that someone says to you, you know, when you walk into the VA, and the first thing that they say to you is, "What are you here for?" That's real inviting. That's real engaging. All that does is want to make someone turn around and walk away, which is what the Bush administration would love to see happen. That's less money he has to spend, because that's one less veteran that's going to have any sort of services down the road. That's one less veteran who won't get a pension. That's one less veteran for him to pay for, and that's all he cares about. You're listening to the Bruce Birch radio program, Radio for a Freer America. If you want to get in on the radio program, you can dial 1-877-443-2366. You can also email me, bruce@brucebirch.com, and when we come back, we'll take a look at this a little bit deeper. Maybe we can come to some solutions. I don't know. Maybe we won't. We'll see. I'll be right back.
Did you hear him talking about on the radio? Did you try to read the writing?
on the wall. Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over again.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my Progressive Point of View, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website over at progressive.org. Yesterday, I talked to a grieving mom named Terry Jones. She lost her son Jason, an Army reservist, not in Iraq, but after he came home, a year ago. After being back just 4 months, Jason hanged himself. He was 23. As of today, the Pentagon says that 2,540 soldiers have died in Iraq, but they don't count the suicides back home. Terry Jones says there have been more than 70, like Jason, who suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder and took their own lives once they got back. Terry Jones is forming a support group with Gold Star Families for Peace to help other families cope with such tragedy. Jones, who lives in rural Iowa, flies her American flag upside down now to protest the lack of care for veterans. It's a distress sign, she says, and our vets are in distress, and our country's in distress, she adds. And though she lives on a 5-acre piece of land up a really long driveway, that didn't stop intruders from turning her flag right side up while she went to the grocery store one day, or from stealing it in the pole, too, in the middle of the night about a week later. But in talking with Terry Jones, I'm less struck by this hooliganism than by the gravity of the loss she has suffered. She wrote Jason a note recently and posted it on his memorial website. Let me read just a bit if I can, and it's not easy for me. Jace, Mother's Day came and went, and it was so hard not to hear from you. You always had something that you were so proud to give me. I still have petals from the pink roses you sent while in training, or all the drawings you loved to make. I hope you are in a sea of flowers now, honey. No worries, no pain, just happy and enjoying the beauty of heaven. I've been writing and talking about this war since before it started, and I've never been moved so much than by Terry Jones. This country is in distress, and it's people like Terry Jones who will, if anyone will, pull us out of it. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine. But that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
I went out with Jeff.
right, you're back on the Bruce Burke radio program. It's about 35 minutes past the hour. This is Radio for a Freer America. And tell you what we're going to do. We're going to head on over to our free speech phone lines. Our good friend Bob from North Dakota is on line one. Bob, how are you doing today, my friend?
Well, I ain't stepped off the chair yet.
That's a good thing, Bob.
Is it?
Yes.
Boom. Okay?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
It's a good thing to whom?
Well, I appreciate you, Bob. I'm glad you're here with us.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you too, Bruce. I do. I really appreciate you. You care. You know, you got heart, boy. You got heart.
Well, thank you.
But we had heart, too. We believed. You know, there's that believe word again. In everything that this so-called nation was supposed to stand for, you know?
Yeah.
We believed in something. And, you know, the people of this so-called nation don't believe in us. Never have, never will. Funny, I remember coming home from Vietnam, and at least then, we had people that protested and stood up for what they believed in and said, no, this is wrong. What we're doing is wrong. But now they don't even stand up. They won't even protest. All they do is sit back, and I don't know what they do. I don't believe anymore. I don't believe this country has a soul. It doesn't have a belief in itself. It just wants whatever it can take, whatever it can get, whatever it can steal, and it's stolen all honor, all dignity from us, the people that they send to fight and steal for them. You know? And you've stolen that from us. You've stolen it from us in your VA system. You have stolen it from us. In whether or not we're guilty of a crime, and of course we are, the crime is immoral in an unjust war. But it's a war that you sent us to. You allowed it to happen. You allowed it to happen, Bruce. All American citizens that didn't just say no and just, stand up for what's right and say, we don't belong in Iraq. We never did. We didn't belong in Vietnam. We don't belong in Afghanistan. And we sure as heck don't belong in Iran. But yet,
I know something, Bob. I totally am there with you, I can only imagine, Bob, what it felt like to come back and what it feels like today to see the fact that there are young men who were just like you 30 years ago, who leave here with an idealism and come back forever changed.
Well, the problem isn't that we're forever changed, because that's a fact, okay? And there's something sadder than that. It's very much sadder than the fact that we veterans, we individuals, come back to a country that sent us to do battle for it. But the people that sent us there do not even recognize us as citizens. No, you don't. You recognize us as derelicts. It's kind of like being Blossom and Jetson, kind of like Katrina victims were and still are. The men and women that went through that horrific event have been just sidelined and forgotten.
I agree.
Pushed off to the side and forgotten. Because what? They were poor, they were black, or they were not of the aristocracy, but how many of us are of the aristocracy? How many of us are of that 10%? And I say 10% liberally, because I'm a liberal, okay? But I think it's less than 10% of the population that actually controls our population. And Stella, I can remember watching old movies when I was a kid. I mean, movies that were old when I was a kid that are kind of strange. But if you went back to when I was a child, and I used to see the old Roy Rogers and the Dale Evans and the Audie Murphy movies and all that stuff, and they were always selling something. It was a an image of this this cowboy with a white hat riding across the prairie, you know, singing a song. Most of them had a guitar like Gene Autry, and you know, they sell you an image. But it was not a truthful image. It was just, it was false. It was fake. It was a, a construction of built up something that somebody wanted you to believe happened. But it wasn't anything like that for the people that lived out here on the plains of North Dakota, because they lived in mud huts, you know.
Right. Right,
built out of sod houses, you know.
Sod, right.
They built them out of sod, and when it rained, well, they'd get a lot of mud in their supper, I guess. But they didn't get much rain. Well, right now, we have this image, we have this idea of what America is. In America, America, is it the people that live in it? No, it's the people that propagandize it, and we're no different than the Nazis or the people that lived in the Third Reich. We're no different than they are, or they were, because they were afraid too. They were afraid they were being attacked by what? Being attacked by everybody, because Hitler told them they were, right? What's the difference between Hitler and Bush? Nothing. There ain't a better difference between them, except Hitler had a more brain. Seriously, that's where we're at. And the people that listen to propaganda radio, propaganda television, propaganda this, propaganda that, they're not listening to Bruce Birch. You said something tonight that just touched me. You said you had a young man standing on a chair or on a stool with a rope around his neck, deciding whether to live or die. And he decided, rather than live in the United States of America as a veteran of a war that was instigated by this country against a country that did nothing against it, he would rather die. And he stepped off the chair and hung himself.
Yeah.
So, okay, I'm the bad guy. I'm a veteran. I went and fought your damn war for you. What are you going to, you're not going to give me any citizenship, because, you know, Bruce, I'm not even a citizen. I'm just an old derelict, just a piece of plastic in the wind, left. Just started, like you were talking about the VA system. I just got a letter from them telling me if I want services. I've been going to the VA for years, and I never had to write to them and ask them for services. They used to just send me, tell me, come in, and we'll do this, and you got to have these tests, you got to have that. Now they're saying, if you want to come in to the VA at Fargo, North Dakota, I have to write them and ask them for specific services that I don't even know I need, unless a doctor tells me, but then I have to see a VA doctor in Fargo to get the services I might need. But if I don't know what I need, how can I ask them for the service I need? So they're not only attacking the veterans of Iraq, the new young veterans coming home, they're attacking us old farts too. They're saying,
absolutely,
if you don't ask us for it, we're not going to give you service. So there you are. So let's tell them the way it is. You don't want us. You didn't want us when you sent us there. So why don't you just, when we get off the plane, hand us a rope and a stool. Okay? Lead us to your room where you got your little hook up, and we'll just hang it up there, that little hook that you got on the end of the rope, because you want to be able to use it again after you're done with us, and we'll step off the stool, or you can jerk it off from underneath us. But right now, the American people and everybody are just jerking the rope, or jerking the stool off, from handing us the rope and jerking the stool off from underneath every veteran that's ever served in the country.
Bob, can you? I tell you what, my friend. Can you hang on over the break? I need to take a break, and then we can come back. And there's a few things I wanted to
let's
mention.
Let's just say it this way: either no, just forget us. Veterans don't amount to nothing. We don't amount to nothing.
Well, in my book, you do.
Well, you. Well, that's why I called you. I'll speak to you maybe again. But right now, enjoy your break. Tell it like it is, Bruce, and never stop telling it like it is, and keep telling it.
If I promise you anything, Bob, that'll be what I promise. Okay?
Just, hey, until they come in with a stool and a rope for you.
that may be coming. You never know, my friend.
I'm not a praying man, because I don't think that prayer answers anything, but if I could pray for anything, it would be for a wake-up call, and maybe you can herald it. Just tell it like it is. Keep telling it like it is. Don't stop. Okay. Don't stop. Please. Just keep telling it like it is. We are not a danger to you. We are hurt. We feel it more deeply than anyone. How he hurts us when one of my young sons, my brother, steps off the stool to end pain that you sent us into, that you gave us. It's your fault that we're there. Every American that hears my voice, it's your fault. You are guilty of sending us there. You didn't do enough to stop this damn thing. You could have done it, but you didn't. Sat on your laurels, you stood on your, or sat on your, whatever bush this time. You sat on it, and you just believed and went along with the program, and you never asked enough questions. Why are we in Iraq? There were no weapons of mass destruction. There was no reason for us to attack a country that never attacked us. We are in an illegal, immoral, unjust war, and we have murdered hundreds of thousands of Iraqi people, and they have every right to resist us. So if your son or daughter comes home in a box, you sent him there with your politics, with your belief that you're right and they're wrong. Well, guess what?
Okay.
They're right and we are wrong.
Okay, Bob, I'm gonna have to cut it there, my friend.
Yeah. Well, you take care, my friend. And I may call again. Okay,
thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for calling. That's our friend Bob from North Dakota, who is a veteran and is very fired up, as you can tell. All right, you listen to the Bruce Birch radio program, Radio for a Freer America. We're gonna take a quick break and we'll be back to wrap up this puppy.
You messing with my life. So I bought my lid. Even messing with my children. And just screaming at my wife. Get off of my back. If you wanna get out of here alive. Freedom. That's what I want now. Freedom. That's what I need now. Freedom.
Now, Mrs. Johnson, before we close on your mortgage loan, I want to make sure you remember Mike.
Hi. You can trust me. I'm African-American, just like you.
So, here's the low monthly payments and interest rates we promised, and here's where they triple.
The rest of this stuff is just here to make sure that we get your house when you can't pay us back.
What a lovely house.
Predatory lenders are never this easy to spot. Call us at 866-222-FAIR and protect yourself with the facts. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Fair Housing Alliance and the Ad Council.
In the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, you can help people in need. Here are a few suggestions. Contact your local Red Cross. Donate blood. Call 1-800-HELP-NOW. You can also donate money. Go to redcross.org. And as well, you can contact your local church, synagogue, or mosque and find out what they're doing to help people affected by Hurricane Katrina. Thank you for your help and get involved.
Are rising fuel prices keeping you at home? Then here's some good news from the IRS. First, your purchase of a new hybrid or electric vehicle entitles you to a tax deduction that could amount to several thousand dollars. And you don't have to itemize to get this tax break. Second, if you're claiming the standard mileage rate for business travel in 2005, remember to figure in the 8 cent per mile increase for the last 4 months of the year. For more news on tax deductions, visit IRS.gov.
Ready?
Not.
Ready?
Not.
Your body's been ready for quite some time.
Not.
Ready?
But not your mind.
Ready?
Not.
Ready?
No way.
You have lots to do before you have a baby. But don't forget to take folic acid today and every day to prevent birth defects one special day. So when all of you is ready, that baby of yours will be ready to take on the world.
Ready?
Not.
Ready.
Are you still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court? You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security, overtime pay, or the environment? Maybe you just want to know if the president's lying to you, or when our troops in Iraq can finally come home. I'm Mark Levine. I've got the inside scoop. When you want to know what's going on inside the Beltway, you need a Beltway insider. Someone who's worked in the government and still has sources willing to give you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. So for lively debate, reasoned opinion, detailed analysis of history and policy, or just a point of view you don't hear expressed in the mainstream media, tune in to the Inside Scoop. Feel free to call in too. Agree or disagree. All opinions are welcome. It just might make you think. That's the Inside Scoop, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central, 11 o'clock Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
All right, you're back on the Bruce Birch radio program, radio for a freer America. We just got off the phone with our good friend Bob from North Dakota, and Bob had some pretty provocative things to say, and, you know, I appreciate him saying, that's, you know, when I said free speech phone lines and I saw that Bob was on the, was the one who was getting ready to come on the air, I said to myself, yep, free speech phone line. Because Bob avails himself of his free speech, he really does, and you know, and he says what he needs to say on this program. You know, I just, you know, it's a struggle, because when I listen to a veteran like that and hear some of the things that he has to say about how he feels about being a veteran, who am I to take that experience away from him? Who am I to say to him, especially since I'm not a veteran. I care a great deal about veterans, and I work with veterans, and I do a lot, you know, everything I can to help veterans, but I'm not a veteran, and I can't relate on a first-hand basis as to some of the things they go through. However, what I can do as a professional, or, you know, and again, you know, what I have done is to try to ease the process so that whatever system they're engaging in is a welcoming system. And that's, in my view, what the VA is doing wrong. It did it wrong for Jason Cooper. It's doing it wrong for our friend Bob in North Dakota. It did it wrong for the veterans today that I took to the Department of Veteran Affairs Hospital here in North Carolina. And it's doing it wrong across the country. It's created a system that does not care about its people. You know? And, you know, what we do, you know, as citizens, what we need to do is take an active role in that. You know, you think, well, you know, the military vets come back, they got the VA. Well, you know what? They might have the VA, but, you know, if they want to go see a doctor, they've got to devote an entire day to see a doctor for a cold. An entire day. And that's only if, you know, they don't, if they get there early in the morning and get on the list in a lot of places. You know? It's very sad. It's very sad. And we have, as Terry Jones, who is Jason Cooper's mother, said, they've identified 70-plus men and women nationwide who have opted to not continue on as veterans, as our friend Bob put it. Well, I'd like to dedicate this show to all those folks who came back from a war, survived a war, and left here of their own volition, in the hopes that maybe some of you folks who are listening will pick up the phone and call your congressman or your senator and demand better health care for veterans. Not only demand it, but tell them it's a right for those veterans to have health care. It's not a benefit, it's a right. They did their part, now it's time for us to do ours. Okay? Do that. Pick up the phone and do that. Because you never know who the next one's going to be who comes back from a conflict and decides that it's not worth it to try to enter any kind of system to get help. Could be your cousin, could be your brother, could be your sister, could be your daughter, you know? And then will you be able to say that you did everything you could do to keep that from happening? My answer is I'm going to pick up the phone and I'm going to call my congressman and I'm going to say to my congressman, who happens to be Brad Miller of North Carolina, I'm going to say, Brad, work harder on health care for veterans. Work harder on health care for veterans.